And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, hello there. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. And it's nice to have you along with us on a sunny but chilly day. Actually, for this time of year, not bad. Looking at a high in the mid-30s, that's seasonal. The normal high, the average high for Butler on this date is 35, and we should hit that, maybe even top it by a couple of degrees. And isn't the sunshine great? Yeah, what a contrast to yesterday morning when it was dark and dreary. Kind of looked like the end of the world. So it's nice. You bundle up a little bit. There's not a great deal of wind. Very gentle breeze every once in a while. For January, for the tail end of January, it's pretty good. Pretty good. We have a good program today. Open talk to begin for a while. We'll have guests a little bit later. We're going to be talking with a representative of the Juniata Valley Winery. To know there are the wineries that will be coming to Butler. Just a couple of days for the 14th annual WISR Butler County Wine Festival. This Saturday at the Days Inn. So we'll be talking to George Hazard from Juniata Valley Winery. That's a long haul for those folks to bring their best wines to Butler for us to sample. So we'll be talking to George about that. And a little bit later today, talking with a couple of women who have co-authored. It's a marvelous little book. You know, I'm tempted to say it's for kids, but it's for parents of young kids too, about how to talk with your kids about tough subjects to discuss for many young parents, prejudice and intolerance. Little kids run into this, even in the primary elementary grades. So a wonderful effort by these two women. Kate Anderson Foley and Jennifer Anderson Smith, and we'll talk to both of them a little bit later on the program today. But it is open talk to begin with. Phone number is 283-2525. If you'd like to join us this week, we've talked about all a variety of things. When you're allowed to make a right turn at a stop sign, there are places here in the immediate Butler area where you can and other places where you can't. We've talked about euthanasia. Assisted suicide came up on the program earlier this week. And a bunch of other topics as well. Open talk right now, 283-2525. The price of a Super Bowl ticket right now is anywhere from $4,000 to $5,000. Who can afford that sort of money? Huh? Wow. Well, now, you know, if you buy a ticket in advance, the face value of the ticket's the cheapest seat for a Super Bowl this year. It was about $1,000, $950, I think. That was for the cheapest seats, by the way, down in Miami, Hard Rock Stadium. But the price goes up, especially once the two Super Bowl teams are determined. And we know, as of last Sunday, that it's going to be the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers. So there are certain fans, rich fans from those areas, who want to go. And right now, the price, if you want to get it on StubHub or some of those other ticket resellers, the going rate for the cheap seats, anywhere between $4,000 and $5,000. Wow. Wow. That's some kind of money to pay for one ticket to a game that you can watch for free on television from the comfort of your recliner or your couch in the living room. We were talking about this earlier this week, too. The price for a ticket at the first Super Bowl was $12. That's true. $12. It featured, by the way, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Green Bay Packers. Packers won the first two. And then we had the Joe Namath story and so on and so forth. The Chiefs were in it again, one of the early Super Bowls. And then it's been 50 years since they've been back. Yeah. I watch some of the game, I guess. I don't have any rooting interest in the Super Bowl this year. Plus, it's now a night game, and, some of us have to get up early in the morning. And it's not easy to stay up until close to midnight watching a stupid football game, you know. I'll probably watch some of it. Could be an exciting game. Could be a dud. Sometimes Super Bowls turn out to be duds. And by the way, it's not this weekend. It's the following one, February 2nd. I saw a sobering program on TV last night. I was talking with my morning colleague, Kate, on Coffee with Kate this morning. It was on PBS, Channel 13, part of a series called Secrets of the Dead. And it was on the Auschwitz protocol. It was a very sad, very sobering hour, but what a great, great program. PBS has some super stuff when you compare it to some of the garbage that is on TV these days, you know. You know, Say Yes to the Dress, My 1,000-pound Fiancé, and Maury Povich, and some of that garbage. PBS just has some great stuff. Well, anyway, this introduced me to a man I'd never heard of before, John Paley, who was the director of the U.S. War Refugee Office. It was formed in Washington, D.C., during World War II, when we became aware of the fact that Jews were being killed in Europe by the Nazis just because they were Jews. We didn't recognize the extent of the problem early on, but we did have an office. And John Paley, P-E-H-L-E, I'd never heard of his name before. But the program was an hour-long program on PBS. I don't know whether you can find it on YouTube if you missed it or not, but there were two young men, Jewish prisoners, who managed to escape from Auschwitz. And I knew about this because I just read a book last year, as a matter of fact, about the Nazi plan to exterminate all of the Jews in Hungary. Hungary was one of the last countries where Hitler and his henchmen were attempting to exterminate all the Jews. Think about that for a second. They wanted to exterminate all of the Jews in Hungary. And this came toward the end of World War II. It was 1944. You know, Germany surrendered in May of 45. Almost a year after D-Day. But this is 1944. And the Germans started deporting the Jews from Budapest and other parts of Hungary. The numbers were staggering, folks. And maybe you've read about this, maybe you've heard about it, but to see the videos on this PBS show last night, to see the videos, oh my. 5,000 Jews a day were being executed in the gas chambers and then cremated at Auschwitz. 5,000 a day over a period, especially a period of 3 months, June, July, and August of 1944. And these two young men who managed to escape, They were aware of what was going on. They knew detailed accounts. They even drew crude maps of the whole Auschwitz complex, where the crematoria were, where the gas chambers were. And they tried to smuggle this information out. Unfortunately, they couldn't get it out. They did make it across the Polish border. Auschwitz was in Poland. They got a brief outline of what was going on there. They managed to get that to Switzerland, a neutral country, and it got into the hands of a U.S. embassy individual there. But he couldn't send the whole report by courier because neutral Switzerland was completely surrounded by Nazi-occupied territory. He did pass on an outline, a brief summary, to this man that I'd never heard of before, John Paley, who headed up the War Refugee Office in Washington. He was appalled. And then eventually they were able to get a full copy of this Auschwitz protocol to Washington, and it was just astonishing. So Paley was trying to convince the U.S. military to bomb Auschwitz. That's what some of the Jewish leaders wanted to happen. They knew that they would kill some innocent prisoners, but at least it would stop the slaughter, the execution and the cremation of 5,000 Jews a day. They ended up not doing it, but eventually John Paley took a copy of the protocol, put it in the mail, mailed it to the Washington Post. The media picked it up. There was great outcry. And by that time, the Nazis, realizing that the end was near, tried to demolish the crematorium so that nobody would know what happened there. The Russians liberated Auschwitz, and we know just how horrible it was. It just I found it hard to go to bed last night after watching that. Incredible. It was on TV because we will mark in another week or so the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz by the Russians. Wow. If you saw it, you can back me up. It was a powerful, powerful piece of television. Okay, let's get to the people here. It's Open Talk, after all, on the It's Your Turn program today. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, Dave.
Hi.
I was reading this book, but I've heard this guy talking about this book he wrote. It was The Fortune of the Trump Families and the Kushners.
Mm-hmm.
I knew nothing about the Kushners, but apparently they were Jewish, and they were living somewhere in Europe in World War II, and they heard that the Nazis were killing Jews, but they just thought it was some kind of rumor. And all of a sudden, they came to their little town, and they started rounding up the Jewish people. And of course, they were Jewish. But here, his grandparents, Jared Kushner's grandparents, were furriers. You know, they made coats and hats.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this being winter, the Germans were like, does anybody know how to sew gloves? And they did. So they saved the Kushners.
Wow.
Because they had a talent. And then the Kushners found out there was some kind of somebody living outside the woods of their town that were trying to get away, and they actually dug a tunnel through their basement, made it out to the forest, met up with these other people, and escaped. And then, you know, from there, they had to go across Europe and without any papers and go through different countries and try to get into any country. And I'm not sure how exactly they made it into America without any kind of, like, you know, documentation, but that was their background.
Did not know that. I did know that the Kushners, what's the son-in-law's name? Jared, I think, isn't it? Is it Jared?
Yeah.
Jared Kushner. I knew that they were from a very wealthy family and dealing in real estate, but I didn't know anything about their family background.
Yeah, that was their background, so it's kind of weird when you look at their immigration stance at this point. But
I'll tell you what,
that story came to mind, so you might want to hear.
Certainly familiar with the Holocaust. I've read about it, but I just watching that program last night and seeing these thousands and thousands of people with a yellow star, you know, pinned to their coats,
mm-hmm.
being herded out. Can you imagine this? 5,000 people a day were executed in the gas chambers and then cremated at Auschwitz. 5,000 people a day. That's just so horrifying. It's almost beyond belief.
Well, here's a years ago, I went to the Holocaust Museum in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I walked in at like 9:30, 10 in the morning, and I took my time going through it because I saw how they built it and everything that went into it. So, and I walked out maybe like 3 hours later, and just leaving that building and walking out in just a normal urban American street, it was kind of shocking.
Yeah.
But yeah, that actually happened.
I've not
that far. Not that long ago.
I've not been to Auschwitz. However, once when I was taking a train through Germany, it was a day-long train trip down the Rhine. I was headed to Munich, and the train stopped, and I was kind of dozing. And I looked out the window of the train as I was pulling into the station, and I was in Nuremberg. And I just said, oh, my gosh, you know, here I am, sight of the war crimes trials, you know, after the war was over. Nuremberg, I did not get off the train there. It was just a quick stop, and then I was on to Munich, but wow.
Yeah, people forget how small Europe really is, you know, if you place it on top of the United States. It's, the whole area is not that big, and for that to happen is kind of crazy.
How could a people...
Hope it doesn't happen again.
How could a people come up with this idea of exterminating an entire race of people just because of their religion, just because they were Jews? It's just almost unimaginable. And it happened 75 years ago, for goodness sakes.
It's not like it's ancient history.
Yeah, we're not talking about ancient history here.
Yeah. Every now and then, actually, when they had the Tree of Life shooting, I believe one of those women that got shot, they were a Holocaust survivor.
Yes, there are still ones who were, you know, kids, little kids at the time. But they interviewed a woman last night on this program on Channel 13 who said, you know, they got off the train when they were on boxcars from Hungary up to Poland and Auschwitz. They got off the train, and she said, Nazi soldiers were standing there, and they just pointed whether you went left or right. If they thought people were healthy enough to be in a work camp, they let them go through. Otherwise, they just pointed to the left, and that was women, the weak and the infirm, children. And this one woman says, you know, my mother, my aunt, my two little brothers, and we thought they were going to another part of the camp. She said, we had no idea that they went right to the gas chamber.
The bad thing is, you know, the soldiers, I mean, these were, you know, they're just saying, hey, they're just doing their job, which, you know, I mean, hey, sometimes you got to, like, I don't know what would happen if you stand up, they'd probably shoot you, but, you know, sometimes you got to question what the hell's going on.
What a terrible thing. And then some people wonder why Jews say, never again. Never again. Wow. Hey, listen, thanks for the call, my friend.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, good to talk with you. 283-2525 is the number. I have not been to the Holocaust Museum. In fact, I haven't been to Washington, D.C. in ages since that museum opened. I really have to. Maybe I can get down there this summer. I don't know. It's not that far from here. You know, I can get to D.C. in, what, five and a half hours, something like that. Okay, give yourself an extra hour to negotiate the Beltway once you get there, because that's a zoo. But I do have to get down. I've not seen the World War II Memorial. That has been constructed since I was there. I need a couple of days. And believe me, I will go to the Holocaust Museum. This is not new to me. I mean, John Paley I never heard of. But I've read about it. I've seen movies, you know, Schindler's List and so on, but every time I see something like this, it just opens such a raw wound. You just can't imagine that the Nazis could do something like this, come up with such a twisted, inhumane plan. Very unsettling, very unsettling. But great TV. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. Open talk here on the It's Your Turn program on this Wednesday. I had to stop and think for a minute. Yes, Wednesday. over the hump day. And a nice sunny day it is. We have to take a break. So we'll do that. We'll come back with more. It's Your Turn program right after these words. Hi, this is Dave Malarkey. I'd like to talk to you for just a moment here about the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here at Butler. What a great job they do to help those who are less fortunate in many ways. They operate the St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank, of course. They have their St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store in the Greater Butler Mart and their Client Aid Program. And the Client Aid Program helps needy families or individuals, you know, maybe with help on a heating bill or a rent payment at the end of the month. Client Aid. And that's funded through the operation of the thrift store. So you can help by donating items that you no longer need or want to the thrift store. It's very easy to do. Drop-off bins are right inside the door. You can use the container outside. They're located in the Greater Butler Mart. So think about it. Next time you're cleaning the closet or the upstairs, instead of throwing that stuff away, why not donate it to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler? We stand tallest when we stoop to help others.
Why pay more when you can get tobacco for less? Their store in Pullman Square Plaza includes a custom walk-in humidor stocked with a great variety of cigars and a 19-foot vape juice bar. Not to mention their Western Pennsylvania's largest glass emporium. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department supplies a wide selection of high-quality CBD products and is always adding to their product lines. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less, with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
We sit, we chat, we educate. It's a program we call Let's Talk. Experts in and around Butler share their knowledge on real estate, natural health options, food, medical issues, jobs, family, and so much more. We're live on the radio, online on our website, and on the free app in your smartphone, also on Alexa-powered devices. Missed a program? Well, catch the segments online at WISR680.com. I ask the questions, they get to answer, and you get the benefit. Join me, Tracy Morgan, on Let's Talk weekday mornings at 11:15 on WISR 680 AM.
Welcome back, friends. Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn, and we're pleased to welcome our first guest on the program today, George Hazard from the Juniata Valley Winery, one of the wineries that will be coming to Butler this Saturday for WISR's 14th Annual Wine Festival. George, hello. Nice to talk with you today, my friend.
Yes, thanks. Thank you for having me on the show. How's everybody doing today?
It's just terrific, and we are so happy to welcome you back to Butler. You've been with us before a couple of times, I think, have you not?
Yes, we've been coming to the wine festival there at Butler for about 8 years now.
Yeah, well, that's terrific.
One of our favorite shows. It's just such a great group of people and good group of wineries. It's one of our favorites.
Juniata Valley Winery, folks, is located in South Mifflin, PA. Many of our listeners may not know just where that is, George. What are you close to a city that our listeners would recognize?
Well, it's not the correct here, but it's not South Mifflin. It's just Mifflin.
Oh, okay.
And Mifflin is located in central Pennsylvania. We're about 45 minutes south of State College, Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit close to Lewistown. We're right between Penn State and Harrisburg. That's probably the best way to describe it.
Okay. Yeah, I know where Lewistown is. That's right on 322 there. Yeah.
That's right. We're right off 322.
So how do you get to Butler? That's quite a haul for you folks to bring your wines all the way. Are you able to come Interstate 80, or what do you do?
Well, sometimes we come out the turnpike, sometimes we'll come out 80, depending on the weather.
Uh-huh.
So if things are nice, we'll probably just come out Route 80.
Good.
You know, it takes us about 3.5 to 4 hours to get there.
Well, we sure are happy to have you, and it just will show our listeners what a big thing this WISR Wine Festival has become over the last 14 years. Tell us a little bit about your winery there in Mifflin, George.
Sure. We've been open now for about 8 years. We started out growing about 2 acres of Traminette, which is a German hybrid grape. And you know, they're producing quite well for us now. We have about 1,100 Traminette vines. Right now, we're producing 24 different varietals of wine. We've produced anything from dry red wines, clean up to sweet fruit wines. So we have quite the assortment. Now, we source a lot of our grapes right here in central Pennsylvania from a lot of our local wineries that, you know, grow different varietals than we do. And we get fruit from all over the country. So we work with a broker, and he helps us with our strawberry wine and our red raspberry and just about any fruit wine that we come out for different seasons.
I'm looking at your website. Very attractive website, by the way. I love some.
Thank you very much.
Love some of the names for your wine. You have a strawberry wine. It's called Morning Thief. I love that.
Yeah, one of my favorite names.
Also,
we have birds. Oh, go ahead.
You mentioned that you have some German theme going. When I hear German wine, I think Riesling. Do you make any Rieslings?
We do, yes. German Riesling is a German varietal. The grapes that we grow are from the Gewürztraminer varietal. It's a hybrid of Gewürztraminer. So since Pennsylvania is very similar to Germany in a lot of the climates and growing seasons, a lot of those varietals do very well here on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. You said that you've been coming here to Butler for our wine festival for about 8 years. When did you open up there at the Juniata Valley Winery?
Well, we started the process back in 2009 and opened our doors in 2012. It took us a couple of years to get established, and as you can see on our website, we have a bed and breakfast as well. Recently, we just put in an event center, so we also do weddings and, catered events. So over time, we've slowly grown the business. But I remember back in 2009 when we thought, hey, let's jump into this, and boy, it's a lot different now. Not quite what we expected, but it's going great.
Did you have experience making wine in your home, or was that done in your family? Is that how you got the idea to start a winery?
Well, I had fooled around with it. I grew up making a lot of different things with my family, not so much wine, but the thought of making wine did not, you know, intimidate me or anything. We make all kinds of food. So when we started dabbling with wine, it was in our basement. That was long time ago. And then once we went to a more of a commercial type business, I sort of forced myself to try to forget everything that I knew and reteach myself how to do things at a more commercial level, you know. Mm-hmm. And boy, it's a lot of trial and error, but I think just about anybody can make a little bit of wine in their basement, you know, with the resources that are online now, and, produce something that's palatable.
Do you have any idea? I know you'll be bringing at least a few varieties to Butler for the wine festival this Saturday. Have any idea what you're going to be bringing on the truck yet?
Sure, we do. We have a lot of great customers there in Butler, and some of their favorites are a wine that we call Redheaded Stepchild. It's a Concord Niagara blend. There's a Mango Catawba, which is called Happy Sloth. We'll bring lots of that. Our Cat's Eye White and Cat's Eye Red. And a lot of our fruit wines. We mentioned Morning Thief. I have one called Summer's Tanager. And we're going to bring some new wines out here this year. We have a Cayuga White that's called Cayuga for a Cause. And we teamed up with a local fire company. $2 from every sale of that bottle, of that wine, stays right in Juniata County, helping families struggling with breast cancer.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to bring a lot of that as well.
What's more popular, your white wines or your reds?
Well, I would say sweet wines are the most popular, and it's about 50-50, red or white. So, you know, it's more personal preference, but in the winter we sell a little bit more red. In the summer and spring we sell a little bit more white.
Mm-hmm.
So, very seasonal.
It seems to me, as I talk to wineries here in Pennsylvania, that the fruit wines are becoming more and more popular. You obviously have several. Morning Thief is strawberry. You have a blackberry. I see a couple of different blackberry wines, and so on and so forth. That is, they're generally sweet wines, are they not?
They are, and a lot of those wines bring very distinct flavors. You know, red raspberry makes such a nice wine, and the acidity is what really makes that attractive. You know, it's very tart, so you have that tart and sweet combination. Our cranberry, which is called Midnight Howler, is probably one of our most popular wines right now. It has that really nice sweet flavor, yet it's very tart, just like a cranberry. So a lot of people really like that type of wine.
Can you make wine all year round, or do you have to do it within a relatively short period of time following the grape harvest?
Well, with the grapes that we bring in, we like to get that done in the fall, right after the grape harvest. Once that's done, I'll start bringing in fruit that's, you know, mostly kept in storage, frozen in storage, and I can bring that in almost any time of the year. But we try to make the majority of our wine between September and, I would say, February.
Some of these specialties are obviously your own recipe, proprietary. I wouldn't ask you, but you have your own little touches for many of these, right?
We absolutely do. and every winemaker does. You know, that's what makes wine such a wonderful drink. Every winemaker has their own little blend or their own little way of doing things, and it creates a different taste, different flavor, and then eventually you start to get a reputation of your own. I don't know. We have won a lot of awards for our fruit wines. We're told that they are definitely distinct and different from other wineries, and people really like them. So, although, you know, I'd like to be well known for my dry reds, which we put a lot of energy into, it seems like people really know us for our fruit wines.
I'm looking at your website. I see one wine that's named Sláinte, which is Irish Gaelic for, loosely translated cheers, or here's to you, or that sort of thing, Sláinte. And naturally, I see here, George, it's in a green bottle. What else would you want for it?
That's exactly right. It's in a beautiful green bottle with a Gaelic-style label. We tell everybody next time they go to Ireland, when they're sitting at the pub, instead of saying cheers, you say Sláinte. So with Valentine or St. Patrick's Day coming up not too far away, we're going to be bringing plenty of that. Saturday. It's a Riesling. It's just a really nice semi-sweet Riesling.
Talk a little bit about some of the types that you've mentioned for folks. And by the way, folks, please, you do not have to be a wine connoisseur. You don't have to be a wine expert to come and enjoy the wine festival. Even if you don't know much about wine, you're welcome to come, because the folks from Juniata Valley Winery at their booth, at their table, they'll be willing to talk to you. In fact, that's the whole point of a wine festival, right, George? You talk to the folks, they take a little sample. You know, we give them, as part of their ticket, a tasting glass, and you try it out. Do you like it? Why not? Why? And if you really like it, then you'll be able to buy a bottle or two, right?
That's right. We tell people, have fun with it. You know, that's what you're there. You're going to have a good time. Try things that you may not have tried in the past. Experience everybody's different types of wines, and just have an all-around great time. The atmosphere there is fantastic. Like I said before, just a lot of great people, and just a good time. We enjoy coming out ourselves just to participate.
The wine industry in Pennsylvania has exploded over the past decade or so. Wasn't all that long ago, George, when we thought about domestic wine, we thought California, maybe parts of New York State. Not anymore. Pennsylvania's big, right? We got wineries all over the place.
That's right. We're huge. We currently are the fifth largest producer of grapes in the country, you know, second only to, you know, California and New York. In those types of areas. The talk is that Pennsylvania and New York are going to set the standard for wine for America. We have California, we know what we got, but the next big thing is coming right out of central Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania in general, and right up along the East Coast. There's been a lot of new grapes grown, a lot of fantastic varietals out there that are doing very well, and I think we're going to see as an industry just a continued push forward well into the future.
Indeed. Well, George, we will certainly welcome you to Butler again. It'll be great to have you back with us on Saturday, you folks from the Juniata Valley Winery. So safe trip, safe travel, and we'll see you on Saturday, okay?
Fantastic. Hey, thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure talking to you, and we will see you Saturday.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, George. Thanks a lot. George Hazard from the Juniata Valley Winery. Folks, that's a long ways off, and that'll show you just how big our WISR Wine Festival has become now over the 14 years that we've been doing this on the last Saturday in January. What else are you going to do on the last Saturday in January, right? Days In, Butler Days In this Saturday. There's two sessions, and the Juniata Valley Winery, just one of several wineries that will be coming with their wares. For your ticket, by the way, the tickets, if purchased in advance, are $20. You can get them here at the radio station, 252 Pillow Street. You can get them online at our website, WISR680.com. You can also get them at the door. They're $25 at the door on Saturday. There's an afternoon session, runs from 2 to 5, if that fits into your schedule a little better. Or if you'd rather come in the evening, we have an evening session, too, from 6 to 9. There'll be all the wineries. You get a wine tasting glass with your ticket. There will be food samples. There'll be vendors and a lot of fun, a lot of socializing this Saturday at the Wine Festival. Hope we can see you there, and we thank George Hazard for chatting with us. Some good wines they're going to be bringing here to Butler from the Juniata Valley. Okay, we need to take a break. We have a couple of more guests who are going to be joining us on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. So please stick around. There's more to come. We'll be back after these messages.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Coming up, listeners, on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, I'm Dave Malarkey. We're going to be talking to a couple of women who have written a really wonderful book
a book to help kids and parents talk about difficult topics like prejudice and intolerance. Let's say hello to our guests. First of all, they both join us by telephone today. Dr. Kate Anderson Foley. Kate, nice to have you with us today.
Dave, thank you so much for having me.
And also on the other line is Jennifer Anderson Smith. Jennifer, nice to talk to you as well.
Thank you. Nice to have us, Dave.
The two of you have co-authored a book entitled Ida Finds Her Voice. As I mentioned, it's a book to help young kids and parents talk about topics like prejudice and intolerance. I have to tell you, before we even start, I've got a review copy of your book in my hands. This is just, Kate, a wonderful, wonderful book. I've gone through it a couple of times already, and I've smiled and just shake my head. You did a good job here, Kate.
Oh, gosh, thank you so much. Jennifer and I, it was a labor of love, right?
Well, let me ask you first, Jennifer, and it's a little difficult here because we're on the telephone, so I'll try to direct my questions specifically to one of you or the other. Jennifer, what was the inspiration behind this wonderful book, Ida Finds Her Voice?
Funny that you ask me. It was my cousin Kate who called me up and said, I have this great idea for a book. And I said, I'm in. So, Kate, why don't you answer that?
Sure. So I would say that it's our combined lived experiences, both personally and professionally. And what I started to see and experience in my work was a real need that children were struggling with making sense out of the world in which we live in. And at the same time, parents were coming to say, how do I start to have these conversations? Like, they were a little uncomfortable starting them. So I reached out to my cousin Jennifer, and just like she said, I said, I got a great idea. Yep, I'm in.
I didn't realize that the two of you were cousins. That's terrific.
Yeah, we're really enjoying it. It's been a real fun ride so far.
Jennifer, let me ask you, how have your personal experiences and your background influenced the main character in your book, little Ida?
Well, you know, again, through lived experiences, you know, my family, you know, we've experienced some things, so I was able to add some things there. So, you know, we try to teach. You know, we're trying to teach our children about empathy and tolerance and to be kind and listen to our inner voice.
The thrust of the story, by the way, you're aiming this at younger children, I assume, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes, and parents, right?
Well, parents too, of course, yeah.
yes, but the younger children.
The book follows Ida. Who appears to be an elementary student, maybe, mm-hmm. I don't know, second, third grade, something like that. I'm just judging from the illustrations in the book. It follows her through a day at school, and the first thing that happens, she's getting on the bus, and one of the other kids in the school gets on the bus, and he's limping. He's a student, Kate, with a physical disability. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this is one of her very good friends, and she is excited to see him get on the bus. He walks differently because he wears braces, and she's all excited to hear about what he did over the weekend, and she overhears kids making fun of him simply because he walks. And one of the mechanisms that we use throughout this book is the word ouch, because that's a simple yet, you know, relatable way to go, ooh, that hurt. Like, what I heard or what I experienced hurt. And that's the first thing throughout Ida's week that she encounters. And she, in her head, is thinking, wow, everyone, why is this happening? And she's trying to make sense out of it, why they would be mean to her friend. And one of the things, too, if I could say, Dave, is another piece of this mechanism is Ida's little stuffed owl named Small. And that's an important part of this book, because that's the inner voice that's going to help her find her own voice. And she, that small kind of follows it throughout the story.
Mm-hmm. In addition to Ida saying ouch when she encounters these instances of intolerance or prejudice, she also, every time you have her talk about getting a strange feeling in her stomach.
Yes.
That she's not really able to verbalize, but she just feels funny, I guess, Jennifer, right?
Yeah, so, you know, we as parents, you know, we teach our kids to think with our brains and feel with our heart. But sometimes we forget to teach our children to listen to our gut, to listen to our inner voice. And that's a really important point that we want to, you know, teach kids, that, you know, listen to our gut, your gut, because it's usually right. So if something feels a little off, it probably is. So it's just something that we, you know, we feel strongly that we do listen to our gut. It usually guides us the right way.
And Kate, the next day, as you indicated, the book follows Ida through a few days of her school, her school time. The next day, this is a tough one to talk about, because it's when a classmate, another young kid, sits close to her and hugs her. You must have had quite a bit of consultation trying to figure out how to deal with this in the book, huh?
It is, but these are real experiences, and in schools, and as parents, we teach our children the concept of personal space. And here is an example of, not maliciously, but way too close and touching, and how did you start to navigate that kind of conversation? And she's saying she doesn't want to be mean, but doesn't she know that you have to ask before? Like, that's a very important concept that we think that you cannot be too young to start to learn those skills.
And once again,
and what I'd like to add is that it's for both boys and girls in a non-confrontational way of just saying, yeah, we don't touch, you know, so it's an easy, you know, we don't have to make it unpleasant. It's like, no, we just, you know, we ask before we touch someone. So it's a nice little lesson that we can, you know, explain to, you know, both boys and girls.
Mm-hmm. And once again, Ida gets this strange feeling in her stomach.
Exactly.
So she knows something's wrong, but not quite sure how to talk about it. And that, you actually have a note to parents in the beginning of your book, because parents can oftentimes, I dare say many times, most of the times, finding it difficult to come up with the right words to talk to their kids, their young kids especially, about prejudice and intolerance, right?
Absolutely. And so because they're uncomfortable, maybe they never learn those things, they tend to whisper or hush-hush it. Well, what does that teach a child? That there's something wrong, right? Like, why are we whispering about something? When, in fact, we should have an open and honest conversation. And if you don't have the answers, we as adults need to say, that's okay. Let's find out together. That is the healthy skill that we want to, you know, advocate in this book for parents and children. Nobody has all the answers. But if we want to raise resilient, healthy children, we need to start having these conversations and be honest and open about it.
Before we take a quick break here, Kate, there's a website where listeners can find out more about your book and where it's available and so on.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. So if you go to www.idafindshervoice.com, you can find out more about the book and the project, as well as ordering, and we are also selling on Amazon.
We'll take a quick break. We have a few more minutes to chat with our guests here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be back right after these words.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there starts here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem. The bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the drive.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey, and on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're talking with Kate Anderson Foley and Jennifer Anderson Smith about a really gentle and wonderful book that they've written, Ida Finds Her Voice, a book to help kids, young kids and parents, talk about difficult subjects like intolerance and prejudice. We talked about some of the instances where little Ida would run into this sort of thing that makes her feel strange, makes her feel like something's wrong. One of them is the fact that she's at her parents at a baseball game or something like that. I don't know which one of you can give our listeners a little bit of this story.
Kate, why don't you go ahead?
Yep. So throughout her week, she's experiencing all of these, you know, what's going on? Something's not quite right. And her parents say, let's go to the park and have fun and have a picnic. Like, take your mind off of things. So they go, and they're a wonderful family, and they're playing a three-person baseball game. And as the father, you know, hits the ball, goes far and long, and Ida starts to run after it, the father realizes she's heading toward the street. So, of course, a good parent, he's running after her. And that's when the next thing happens. And because they are a biracial family, and the father is African-American, and he's running after Ida, who, you know, has a lighter skin tone, the crowd misinterprets. And that's where some of the prejudice and intolerance, like, really comes out. And there's a part of the book, you know, that I think wonderfully illustrated, that shows some of the crowd's faces and their sentiment. And when the mom finally reaches up, you know, she's saying, this is our child. And it's a pivotal moment for Ida, because she starts to realize she is the perfect combination of her family. And then she has the courage to start talking about what happened throughout her week. And that's when her parents really start to unpack what is intolerance, and gives her, or actually Ida finds it within herself, that she has the power all along to stand up and to speak out for kindness and tolerance.
I want to touch on one other story and then a couple of general questions before we run out of time here. There's also a story, and by the way, these stories are brief, folks. There are a couple of pages with illustrations where there's a girl, I think Ida's out at recess, and there's a girl who has a scarf on her head, and somebody else says that she shouldn't play with her because she is a Muslim. Wow. How to deal with that with young kids, eh, Kate?
Yes, but these are real issues, and our world is diverse, and that's a great thing. But again, we start to see Ida trying to make sense out of what's happening. You've got one person saying, you shouldn't play with her because she's from a different culture, because she's Muslim, where when you think about Ida through her eyes and little kids through their eyes, what do they really want to do? They want to play. They want to have a friend that they can run around the playground with and laugh and have fun. And that fun was taken away by a intolerant comment. That's where we're trying to teach them how to start navigating that again, finding her words. Doesn't everybody want to have a friend? Sure they do. Yeah. Right? Get to know somebody. And I think that's one of the most powerful pieces of this book, is that we help children put words to feeling so they can understand, but they can appreciate who someone is from their perspective and their background and their culture.
Jennifer, a question for you. We could teach a lot of adults some of these lessons. Why is it so important that your main character, Ida, is a child?
Oh, you know, children can, you know, they see through, you know, they're children, you know, so we want to have the voice of the child. But it's, you know, as adults, we don't really know, you know, we're having difficulty talking about race or, you know, other difficult conversations with one another. So our objective is to start young so that by the time they are our age, there won't be difficult conversations, that we'll be able to have frank conversations and not get so angry with each other and try to learn from each other. But through the eyes of a child, you know, that's, I think that's a good way to teach a child. A
wonderful way for adults to look at it, too. We're chatting with Jennifer Anderson-Smith and Dr. Kate Anderson-Foley, cousins and co-authors of this really wonderful new book. Kate, where did the name Ida come from? There's a little history behind your choosing Ida as the name for your little girl, right?
Absolutely. And so I will say everything that Jennifer and I did was very intentional. We spent a lot of time. One of the things that I felt real strongly, and Jennifer did too, is that you want to have a strong character, and Ida B. Wells was that historical strong character. She was a woman who, African-American woman, journalist, newspaper publisher, you know, abolitionist, feminist. So she was like so much, and she helped advocate for people who, and stood up and spoke out. And so that just seemed like a natural fit for us.
And what about Ida's sidekick owl? Where did the name Smalls come from? There's history to that too, right?
Yes, and that's the beauty of this book, is that even older kids, like, you know, third, fourth grade, can start to look at this and research who are these characters, you know? So Robert Smalls, he was an American hero, a businessman, and a publisher. He also served in the House of Representatives from South Carolina, and he was he has a great story. I'm going to leave that to the readers, but there, he has a fabulous story, an historical, true story, that happened in South Carolina, and he was an American hero. So we thought, what better way to help Ida find her voice than through Small?
Young kids.
And we know how wise owls are, right?
That's true. Very wise.
Yes.
Most, or certainly many, I don't know, maybe most primary elementary kids or preschool kids, they have a stuffed animal that they become close to, maybe even talk to, right? And by the way, we're talking about boys and girls. This is rather common.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I must ask you about the illustrator for your book, because as wonderful as I think your brief stories are, and the way you deal with these tough-to-talk-about subjects of prejudice and intolerance, the illustrations are marvelous. Who did this work for you?
My friend Dawn Griffin, DawnGriffinStudios.com, Griffin with two F's, fabulous. It was great fun to work with her. One of the things I'd like to point out to anybody listening, if for Owl, when he's wearing a hat and he has an emoji on his hat, and when Ida's sad, the emoji is sad. When Ida's happy, the emoji is happy. So it's just a fun little thing to point out. It's kind of representing her inner voice.
You know, I've looked through your book a few times and I never noticed the emoji.
That's the beauty of this book. You just keep looking at and rereading it and finding good things to discover.
Well, as you were talking, I flipped through until I found it. You're absolutely right. Just a couple of things, listeners, a little background about our two guests, and I have to let them go here. Jennifer Anderson-Smith has committed her life to activism and community service. Kate Anderson-Foley's personal and professional life has been grounded in social justice and breaking down barriers for children who have historically been marginalized for one reason or another, the color of their skin, their religion, their physical disability, whatever. This is a great gift for parents or kids. Certainly would help parents talk with their young children about topics such as this. The title is Ida Finds Her Voice. And Kate, give us that website again where people can get, listeners can get more information.
Yep. So you can go to www.idafindshervoice.com.
Jennifer, Kate, nice to have you with us today. I love your book.
Thank you so much,
Thank you
Dave.
So much for having us.
Sure. So long now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Imagine me and you, I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the girl you love and hold her tight. So happy together. If I should call you up, invest a dime, and you say you belong to me and ease my mind, imagine how the world could be so very fine. So happy together. They toss the dice, it had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me. So happy together. It had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me. So happy together.